I'm Duncan Strauss.
Really delighted to be bringing another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with veterinarian Dr. Marty Becker about his latest book, Your Cat, The Owner's Manual, and various other topics as well. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Jeff Beck with his version of Tiger Rag here on Talking Animals. Jeff Beck with his version of Tiger Rag, an animal song of sorts, leads us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Dr. Marty Becker, a veterinarian who regularly appears on Good Morning America and the Dr. Oz Show, and is also a prolific author. His 20th book is just out. Your Cat, The Owner's Manual, Hundreds of Secrets, Surprises, and Solutions for Raising a Happy, Healthy Cat. We'll discuss the new book, various feline issues, and later we'll ask Dr. Becker to respond to calls and emails from listeners about their animals. Cat, dog, and other animals, well, not just limiting it to cats at that point. So we'll speak to him in a few moments here on Talking Animals, and as usual, again, we'll welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663. Or at email, by email, dj@wmnf.org. A little bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which of course involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Dr. Becker's new book, Your Cat, The Owner's Manual. Also later, we'll hear some more animal songs, including a cover by Paul Thorne, who played two shows for WMNF last weekend. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item comes from the New York Times, a blog, the Green Blog, I think it was Monday, and I'm just going to read some of it to you. Zoo Boise, a small city zoo in Idaho, receives a lot of praise in the zoo community for its commitment to and its success in raising money for conservation programs aimed only at animals in the wild, a goal many zoos aspire to but do not necessarily follow through on. The problem, most zoo officials say, is that supporting their live animal collections is so expensive they do not have money left over to finance conservation in the wild. But are zoos really handling their live collections in a way that helps their kin in the wild? Zoo officials say part of their mission is to inspire visitors to contribute more to conservation, but it's hard to measure how successful they are at doing so. Zoo Boise gets only 325,000 visitors each year, fairly modest compared with attendance at larger city zoos. St. Louis, the nation's attendance leader, has roughly 3 million visitors a year. Yet Zoo Boise decided it had to do better at supporting field conservation. So in 2007, it raised zoo prices by a quarter and then 50 cents and devoted all of the extra money to projects for wild animals that are completely independent of its own programs. Quote, this is in response to the growing extinction crisis that threatens some of the world's most famous inhabitants within the next 50 years, the zoo tells visitors in its written materials. We must act on their behalf. Zoo Boise came up with the idea of letting visitors vote for where their money should go. Visitors are given a token and allowed to drop it into the slot of one of three conservation projects that the zoo chooses each year. This past year, the Boise Zoo raised $110,000 to help finance projects like research on wolverines in northern Idaho and for tarsier habitat education programs in the Philippines. The zoo also raised about $120,000 for outside conservation by charging fees for activities like feeding giraffes and for boat rides. So, interesting approach and structure there that we'll keep tracking here at Talking Animals. This popped up on the internet starting about a week or so ago, and you may have seen the picture, but the picture's kind of crucial, but just even reading about it, hopefully I just thought we should share this. A heartbroken male pit bull stayed with his dead friend for 14 hours over the weekend after the female pit bull was struck and killed by a car in Phoenix. The male pit bull was seen nuzzling its dead mate even as passersby and local business owners left behind food for the dog. The photos of the dogs widely shared on Facebook, which inspired one outraged woman in Chicago to call the mayor's office in Phoenix to demand action from the city's animal control staff. They're going to look into this and find out why it took them 14 and a half hours to get the dogs picked up, Karen Aspen said. The dog is now being cared for. His handlers say he was so withdrawn that he might not be adoptable, though inquiries from the public have been made. I want to remind you, I mentioned this last week, several local-owned independent pet stores have partnered with Canine Dental Service and Dr. Kristen Swanson, holistic veterinarian, to host dental cleaning services in their stores using no anesthesia or drugs. As part of the service, every pet will receive a complete veterinary physical exam prior to their teeth cleaning. According to Dr. Swanson, routine teeth cleaning on pets should be performed every 6 months, just like their human counterparts. Since most pet owners do not want to expose their best friends to euthanasia, to anesthesia and drugs that often most pets just go without proper dental care. And these are three in a row starting today, May 30th at WAG, 304 East Davis Boulevard in Tampa from 10 to 3 p.m. Phone number there, 813-258-9181. Then tomorrow, Thursday, May 1st at Health Mutt, 6116 North Central Avenue in Tampa, 813-231-3137. And then Saturday, June 2nd from 9:30 to 1:30 p.m. at Groovy Cats and Dogs, 2305 West Linebaugh Avenue, 813-265-1333. And just to follow up something we also touched on last week, Golden Retriever Rescue of Southwest Florida. Again, they're really seeking foster homes, as we talked about last week. The summer is a tough, tough time for placing fosters. Folks are traveling. The snowbirds have flown the coop, etc. So when you foster a dog for Golden Retriever Rescue Southwest Florida, they supply the veterinary needs, and the foster home provides love, food, and toys. So a couple of the dogs we mentioned last week found homes, and so there's a couple more that we want to tell you about, including a 6-year-old blonde golden retriever, Lucy, was surrendered by a family that had to move into a rental home, and a day before they moved, the association voted to not let renters have dogs. So there's that story. And there's 3-year-old golden retriever, Kirby, was surrendered when his family was moving across the country and decided not to take Kirby with them. And there's others as well. So again, if you'd like to help out or just find out more, they have a great fostering page at grrswf.org, grrswf.org. And they're on Facebook as well, or you can just write directly to their foster coordinator, Lynette Malinchak. And her email is Lynette, L-Y-N-E-T-T-E, at grrswf.org. All right, well, if we have time, we'll come back to some more things later. Right now, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves, of course, animal-oriented comedy. Select this one, our chat with Dr. Becker and his new book in mind. This is Paula Poundstone with a piece called Cats Puff Up on today's Comedy Corner. a talking animal.
You know what I can't figure out? All my cats are indoor cats, and some of them are out and out fat and lazy cats, and I don't know, why they puff up when they fight with each other? You know, I know, you know, they say, oh, cats puff up so they look bigger to their adversaries, but first of all, my cats all know each other, you know what I mean? They don't really believe for a moment that one of them got really big. I mean, cats know about puffing up. That did they think it was a trick only they knew? And the other cat actually just got bigger in that moment? That doesn't make any sense. And it seems to me it must take a lot of energy to puff up. I would think that they would just have a meeting, and one day my head fat lazy cat would just turn to the others and say, look it, from now on, let's nobody puff up. We already know about puffing up. We're not fooling anybody. If you puff up and I puff up, we're the same anyways. Tell you what, once a day I'm going to grab each of you with my front paws and kick at you with my back paws, and you just take it. I tell you what, cats are no help whatsoever in terms of security, you know. You know, cats get the exact same look on their face for a big giant moth as they do for an axe murderer. And you go, great, I'm either going to get a hole in my head or my sweater.
All right, that was Paula Poundstone. Why do cats puff up? Or cats puff up, sorry. Taken from her CD, I Heart Jokes, Paula tells them in Maine. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with Dr. Marty Becker, today's guest. You may have seen Dr. Becker on Good Morning America, The Dr. Oz Show. And you might have read one of his many books. His latest and 20th is Your Cat, The Owner's Manual. And he's here in studio with us today. Later today, by the way, Dr. Beck will be signing his new book in Tampa at the Petco, located at 136 Southwest Shore Drive, from 1:30 to 3 p.m. But right now, he's here with us, so a reminder to invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663. Let's welcome Dr. Marty Becker to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Becker.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. I was just reminiscing this morning. I'm a veteran veterinarian of over 30 years, and I remember, I'm almost 60 years old, I remember being back on the family farm in southern Idaho, and the cats had a utilitarian role. They were mousers, basically, and
sure,
they lived in the periphery of the farm in the haystacks with a big old tomcat with a big old thick neck, you know, that resulted from about 50 different fights with other cats.
Right.
But, you know, now today's cats, they're kind of born retired. You know, which is not good.
Right. They don't have enough to do.
Yeah. Very efficient hunters. In evolution, the better the hunter you were, the more you could sleep. And that's why humans, before the advent of dogs to help with the hunter guns, you know, we could only sleep 8 hours a night. And cats, 18 to 20 hours, because they're such lethal hunters. And
sure,
so now, because of the boredom issues and food is love, 50% of America's cats are overweight or obese, and they're like little tubby time bombs ticking away their health. It's funny in cartoons, but in real life, it's not.
Right. Well, that's, I'm sure, among the many things that we're going to try to squeeze is many things. And in fact, one of the things that this brings me to, just because I found it, you know, sort of an interesting way to help address that, maybe you could talk a little bit about food puzzles.
Right. If you think about cats, it took 5 steps to eat. You had to detect your prey, pursue it, apprehend it, kill it, and then eat it. When you put a food in just a bowl, you go right to step 6, which is eat it. And so it's like a kindergarten degree when you needed a graduate degree originally to eat. And in the wild, you know, you don't see any cats laying out there with a big old mouse gut, you know, just going, oh my gosh, I've let myself go. You know, they're
right,
always hungry. So by using food puzzles, if you're using feed and kibble, they're basically like a slot machine. So the kibble is measured out, put in there, and it has to be turned, spun, manipulated, dropped somehow for the kibble to come out. So you're recreating the hunt in a non-lethal way in the home. And if you're feeding canned food, which is actually what we recommend now, we now know as veterinarians that we've been feeding cats wrong all these years, and cats do better with canned food. And if you start a cat out, you want to feed them different kinds of canned food so they don't imprint on one variety.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, if we start out with Crest toothpaste, you tend to stick with Crest toothpaste.
Sure.
You don't want cats to stick with it. But you put it in different portions. So you take individual dishes, or at our house, we use Cool Whip containers, but we just spread that food out in like six portions. Some downstairs, some in the upstairs guest bedroom, some underneath the bed. And so the cat has to go look around the house.
They got to work for it. Yeah. Cool. All right. So now there's a zillion other things I hope to get to with you, Dr. Becker. But one of the couple things we just touched on briefly before we went on air that I think we should spend some time on sort of right off the bat, a couple things that you had mentioned, some things about coats and just some of the issues that happen with animals. And then also the sort of heartworm story that you were telling me, which, you know, kind of, I think, makes people have to rethink their whole thought about, well, we got indoor cats, we're safe. It's not quite as straightforward as that. Yeah.
The other day I was on Amazon and I was kind of deflated. You know, Your Cat, The Owner's Manual comes out and the book that was ahead of it was Crafting with Cat Hair. So, you know, cats are big shedders, and that's the number one cat owner complaint is excessive shedding. And what I want you to do there is hair is going to naturally fall. Even the hairless breeds, the Sphinx and stuff, they even shed, but the hair is small and kind of crinkly, so you don't notice it as much. But you want them to shed at a time and place of your choosing. So there's a product called the Furminator, which I love that name, like the Terminator.
Yeah.
But the Furminator gets rid of that loose hair on that undercoat, and so it ends up in the trash can, not in you, not augured in by the cat's tongue, where it can create problems with excessive hairballs. So it can reduce shedding up to 90%.
Wow.
And if you have allergies to cats, the allergy is actually to a protein in their saliva that when they groom themselves, it becomes part of dander. So the saliva becomes part of dander. Hair is the carrier for the dander, which contains a saliva protein, which actually triggers the allergy. The worst cats for triggering those are black cats. So black cats have about 10 times more of the protein, up to 10 times more than light-skinned cats. So really? A black, unneutered male cat is the worst for triggering that. For anybody that has cats, to reduce those allergies, just take an unscented baby wipe and wipe them down once a day, just lightly on their coat, and that'll dramatically reduce the allergies that people have.
Hmm.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about parasite control, because we all think of dogs. Oh, gosh, fleas, heartworm, we're going to give them this medication. 50% of dog owners give their dogs heartworm medication. There's a new study of Gulf Coast cats. It was a year-long study, and they found out that 27% of all cats have been exposed to heartworm. They had antibodies against heartworms, and 10% had a current adult heartworm infestation. Now, to put that in perspective, only 5% of all cats get leukemia. So twice as many get heartworm as have leukemia, and it's a messy disease in cats. It's very, very difficult, almost impossible to treat once they get it.
Mm.
So the point is here, you want to use a preventive for them year-round. So lifetime parasite control, which includes heartworms. So there's products like Revolution that kill heartworms, fleas, internal parasites, and ear mites. I kind of joke it kills everything but the cat, but it's a once-a-month product that provides that invisible whole-body protection. And also, a new study coming out of North Carolina State University that shows a link between Hemobartonella, that's carried by fleas, ticks, biting insects. Cats and dogs are reservoirs. And we've heard of cat scratch fever. Remember Ted Nugent?
For sure. Yeah, well, especially lately. Yeah, it's hard to miss him. Yeah.
Called cat scratch disease, actually. It's the number one zoonotic disease. That's diseases transmissible from animals to people. But we used to think it was a limiting thing, red, swollen lymph nodes, but it passed. Now they're showing a link between Hemobartonella and fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and rheumatoid arthritis in humans.
Wow.
Now, my wife has rheumatoid arthritis, so that really perked my attention. So they're now having these more, better assaying techniques. And so it looks like there's a link there. So by taking care of the cat, you're protecting the human family as well by using the Revolution.
Wow. Well, again, sort of disturbing news. Again, as we talk about off air a little bit, I mean, again, if you're keeping your cats indoors, you just sort of think, I'm protected against this, and this by virtue of them being indoors.
I didn't even mention that. Of the cats that were positive, 28% were indoor-only cats. I mean, truly indoor-only cats.
Wow.
That didn't go indoor-outdoor. But what happens if that mosquito gets in, you have to think of it like a drone. I mean, it is absolutely looking for a meal. They're always hungry.
Right.
And it's a dog or cat that gets bitten, it just takes one.
Wow.
Now, on the positive side, though, let me say something positive.
Sure,
there's also
a
new study out from the Minnesota Stroke Research Center, a peer-reviewed study. If you have a cat, you're 40% less likely to have a heart attack or a stroke than non-cat owners. So it's related to this stress relief, basically, that cat owners provide. And
the calm and the well-being.
The calm, yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, so if you just tuned in, we're talking with the veterinarian Dr. Marty Becker, whose new book is Your Cat, The Owner's Manual. He'll be signing that book in Tampa later today at the Petco on 136 Southwest Shore from 1:30 to 3. Meanwhile, though, if you'd like to ask Dr. Becker a question now here, offer a comment. It doesn't have to be cat-related strictly. You can call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.com. .org. So, Dr. Becker, one sort of recurring element of the new book, and a caution often, is the sort of profound importance of the litter box from a few different angles, actually. So, for example, this is probably all too familiar for those who work or volunteer in shelters, but you point out one section that refusing to use the litter box is the number one reason cats are given up to shelters. So that alone makes it hugely important, I think. Maybe you could just sort of, you know, talk about, you know, litter box problems, what causes them, and what can be done to either correct them or preemptively avoid them.
It's funny, being in Petco's on this tour, asking people what kind of litter they use and why. It's fascinating to see, you know, well, I don't want something that has dust, or this seems more eco-friendly, or somebody told me to try this one, or this is something new, so I thought I'd see what it was like. I like this thing that had these little crystals that got rid of odor, but they really don't know what they're buying. So let's talk about cats. Cats were desert dwellers. They all derive from this wild African cat, just like all dogs derive from wolves. They're desert dwellers, which means they tend not to drink much water. They don't have a real high thirst drive like humans and dogs do. So that's why drinking fountains, by the way, are very important for cats' overall health. You can buy a drinking fountain for $25 to $50, probably the single best thing you can do for your cat's
overall
health.
And by that, you kind of mostly just mean those bowls where there's just running water.
Yeah, what you do, the best ones have a water that drips down or pours down. It hits a ramp. A lot of cats like to lick it off the ramp. Some like to just take it right off that
spigot.
A funny thing, too, about cats, I'm getting a little off topic here, but cats actually don't lap water like dogs do. Dogs curl their tongue and lap it in with kind of sloppily. They've done high-speed camera studies, and cats' tongues actually go down and just touch the surface of the water 4 times a second and pull it up, and the mouth closes around that column of water. So the hydrostatic action of that pulls that column of water up, and their tongue actually moves 1 meter per second.
Wow.
So it's incredible speed that they do that with.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the litter box. In the wild, in the desert, you know what? The whole world's your litter box. You know, you scrape up some sand, you go to the bathroom, that takes care of it. But, today's suburban or urban home or apartment, that's a little bit different. So what you want to do is you want to have, first of all, very clean. None of us like to go. They have a great sense of smell. And I always think of some houses, some litter boxes, like the rock festival or the county fair or something where you go there and wow, this is rough, but I gotta go. Well, if you're a cat, you might decide, you know what? I don't want to go there. I'll go someplace else. I'll go in the house plant or I'll go behind the credenza here. So clean is really important. Basically, if you're home, you want to scoop every time they go to the bathroom, just like we flush every time we go to the bathroom. If you're not, as often as you can. Every 2 weeks, you want to dump all the litter out and completely out. Don't just keep, take some out because you're taking the scat out.
Right.
And
start
add a little
over.
More. Start over. Throw it out. Wash out a little soap and water. Let it air dry. Start over again. Don't use any plastic liners in there. The cats hate plastic. They don't like covers either. They don't like that cover. And they like it big. They want to be able to turn around in there. A lot of little cat boxes are too big. And then as far as the litter, they've done these tests now, and cats prefer clumping clay litter that is unscented or has a little carbon in it. So,
and have they filled out surveys saying
what they finally did is they actually had cats where they had these
sort of
preferences for them. So
sure.
They tested depth, they tested type, and that was by far and away. The second one was recycled newspapers, but number one is clumping clay litter that is unscented.
And speaking of unscented, and you touched on this a moment ago, but just one of the many things I found fascinating in your book is that you say at one point that the cats actually have a more precise and stronger sense of smell than dogs, which I thought, wow, you always hear about dogs and their sense of smell. You just don't really get that same sort of sense, about cats. But I thought it's really interesting. And, of course, it all now hooks together with what you're saying about the litter box.
Yeah. And by the way, the litter box, don't put it in the laundry room. That's one of the places we think, oh, it's clean. It's got a kind of floor. It's big and roomy. You know what? That washing machine dings and dongs and it bounces up and down, and the spin cycles and everything. You have to have one more litter box than every cat, and you have to have at least one litter box on every level of your house. And I was talking to people on this tour. Every cat household, there's a benevolent dictator, and there's very levels of dictatorship. there. That's not one cat, one vote. There's a hierarchy there. And some cats will bully other cats when they go to the bathroom. And if, you know, think of your kids, if they were going to school and there was a bully that was, might beat them up every time they went to the bathroom, I'd either hold it or I might go somewhere else. And that's what the cats will do. So a cat can't guard every litter box. So have enough litter boxes. A great place for one is a guest bathroom. Because typically have the kind of floor you can clean and it's easy to dispose of the stuff there, but you can't have too many litter boxes. And one other thing too, if your cat's not using the litter box or it's inappropriate clawing, because constructive clawing is good. We want them to have a surface where they can stretch claw sheaths and everything like that. But the edge of the couch, the new armoire, the new TV entertainment center stand, not so good. Or inner cat aggression, you get a new cat and they're starting to fight and they're stressed and they're urinating out of stress. There's a pheromone called Feel-Away. And so it's like feline, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y. And it's a synthetic version of the feline cheek pheromone. So when those cats rub against you or against furniture, they're going, cat good housekeeping seal of approval. Tested,
this is
approved.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
So this stuff, it goes into the air. And it, you know, you don't smell it, dogs don't smell it, only cats smell it. But it literally is like three glasses of wine for every cat and a Valium. I mean, they just get along, they use the litter box, they scratch the right things. And in fact, on the cover of the book, you'll notice how relaxed these cats look. And those are three different cats from three different owners that had never had their photo taken. They're in a photo studio.
Wow.
And look how relaxed they are.
Yeah.
You know why?
They're drugged up on Feel-Away.
Yeah, so what we did is the day before we plugged these diffusers in. They're kind of like a Glade plug-in or a Bath and Body Works plug-in. So it was in the air. And then when I practice or when I took that photo, if I practice, I wear it like cologne. So when I go in it is just like going to church. I wear, you know, I like for the little old ladies to smell my other cologne, but for those cats, man, I want them to think, man, this guy is the bomb.
This is where we want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, gosh, we got, not surprisingly, so many folks who want to ask questions and let's take one here who, has actually been holding for several minutes, even before I think we started talking. So let's, hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Marty Becker.
Hello.
Hello, it's your turn. A quick question for Dr. Becker.
Dr. Becker, I've been listening, and honest to God, we have been, we're having the issue with the litter box, too. And everything that you have just told us, we have been totally doing. And we are still having issues with it. And I think that I've got three at this point. One of them is about a 14-year-old female. Very small. Then I've got two brothers that are identical twin classic cabbies, and one of them is the alpha male. And everything was going fine, and we had perfect communal living together until our son came home. And ever since then, it has been a total whiz fest all over our entire house, and I mean everywhere. Countertops, stove, bathroom, bedroom. Anywhere and everywhere except the litter box, even like right next to the litter box.
Well, I might be able to help you here. First of all, I should have mentioned too, you have to always rule out medical issues because sometimes some gets, like cats get a thyroid issue or they'll become diabetic or they'll get an infection and they literally can't hold it. And then one starts marking and it's like gang signs. Everybody starts marking. Most of the time though, when cats start urinating, I call it sending pee mails. It's designed in the wild to be very sticky. So when they pee, it was supposed to stick on a tree. It's supposed to stick on a vertical surface. So it's not designed to be cleaned very easy. But, assuming that you did do everything, that you used the pheromones, because normally the pheromones, take about 30 days to work and it covers about 800 square feet per diffuser. So sometimes you need a little more. And it also comes in a little spray bottle like cologne. So you spray the areas where they tend to, sleep. But many of these cats, I'll end up putting on Prozac, and because it is very stressful for them, and so you're looking for the anxiolytic effect of Prozac. But I at least in half the problem cases, Prozac absolutely stops at day two.
Wow!
So you might talk to your veterinarian about that issue, and probably could get it cleared up.
Thanks for your call. We're going to move on. Thank you. Okay, let's take one more right now, at least because this one has also been holding quite a while. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Marty Becker.
Hi, I have a question on a holistic level.
Okay.
With dogs and the back to the heartworm. You know, a lot of times you hear professionals talk about you know, well, if the dog was in the wild, they'd have this, you know, chase and catch and eat and all that stuff and, you know, all the stuff that they would do if they were in the wild. But if they were in the wild, they certainly wouldn't have access to heartworm pests, insecticides that we inject into their body. So, you know, I have to question that.
Well, I'm, you know, one of the things, I'm a fan of integrative medicine. I'm certainly not a specialist in any regard, but one of my very favorite friends is, and people I respect, is Dr. Narda Robinson from Colorado State University. She's the head of integrative medicine there, and she showed me incredible things over the years, from everything from massage therapy for pets to acupuncture to herbal therapy and things that some of which I am able to incorporate into my practice. Because I just don't play a vet on TV on Good Morning America, Dr. Oz. I'm a practicing veterinarian still. But one of the things you find out about dogs in the wild is they don't live nearly as long as our domestic pets. Like people often say, well, they can, you know, in the wild they chew bones and things. Yeah, but they fracture teeth and they don't live as long. And heartworm, you know, one of the biggest reservoirs is the wild canids. And it's just one of those diseases that is preventable. It shocks me sometimes, especially in areas like here where this is like the parasite capital of the world, where you guys have everything. It's so simple, safe, and effective now to put them on a preventive. That, and it's very, you know, basically the way you treat heartworm disease is to poison these worms with, an arsenic-like compound. So I just don't think there's an alternative there for that kind of treatment.
Thank you for your call. Thank you.
What you have to say, but it sounds like a carcinogen at the same time.
It sounds like a what, sorry?
A carcinogen at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for your call.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Dr. Becker, just again, kind of skipping around here, you know, so they say a little knowledge can be a dangerous thing, but sometimes it could be the opposite. Like I guess my baseline before I read your book was that I just would never have considered, giving human remedies or medicine to a cat. I just would have thought, well, that's crazy, dangerous, whatever. And, you know, in the section where you talk about kind of the shared medicine cabinet, you outlined some that actually can be used that way. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the medicines that we could use, yeah. with guidance, obviously, with our cat friends.
You know, the number one reason people call animal poison control for cats is the purposeful or accidental ingestion of human medications. If you have aspirin, you can give aspirin or Tylenol to a cat, but it is a tiny dose, almost a microscopic dose, and it's given every few days. And so there's thousands, tens of thousands of cats every year killed because somebody tried to give them an aspirin or acetaminophen, or they accidentally ingested it. Pepto-Bismol, same thing. Pepto-Bismol has an aspirin-like compound. Dogs works wonders, you know, but cats doesn't work so well. But there's a lot of things we use in cats, everything from unscented baby wipes to wipe them down. That dramatically reduces allergies. You can use kale pectate for them for diarrhea.
And didn't am I recalling correctly, like Benadryl was actually
Yeah, Benadryl for, that, yeah, yeah, for an antihistamine for allergic reaction. And one of the other things, too, that's really good for cats is probiotics. That, you know, they tend to have a gut that gets stressed out a lot, too. And we think about, I remember as a kid, I grew up on a dairy farm in southern Idaho, and we had that proverbial cat that when you were stripping the cow, if you'd done to the milking machine, you cleaned the last of the milk out. And when you strip it, you could squirt it clear across the barn, and the cat would sit up on its haunches and drink that milk. But in real life, most cats are lactose intolerant, and they actually don't do very well on milk. Canned pumpkin works great for hairballs. So not the spicy kind, not the things that, but the unspiced canned pumpkin, a tablespoon once a week, helps those hairballs speed right through in a nice, natural way.
Wow. Cool. Well, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is veterinarian Dr. Marty Becker. You might know him from Good Morning America or the Dr. Oz Show. And his new book is Your Cat, The Owner's Manual. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. We do have kind of a flurry of emails here as well. Let's read one of those. My 13-pound dachshund suddenly developed a twitch in her neck. It is strong and bilateral. It causes her ears and shoulders to move. My vet can offer no reason for it. She has full range of motion with no pain. Can you offer any clues? Thank you.
I love dachshunds, by the way. I always joke, you know, everybody has their inside humor. I always call them two dogs long and a half a dog tall, you know. I love dachshunds. There's a couple things it could be. The most common thing would be some kind of a slip disc in its neck. They're very prone to intervertebral disc disease, and it could be one that's just putting pressure in something that's causing muscle spasms. That's what it actually sounds like. And muscle spasms is a result of irritation to the nerve. So I would recommend getting some imaging done so you could look and see if there's a narrow disc space. And if it was, it could be something that might be handled by anti-inflammatory drugs and some antispasmodics for the spasms, or it might be something that required surgery. The other thing would be, if it's on a regular time, could be an epilepsy. And again, those are easily controlled by generics. I have an epileptic dog myself, and it's one of those things they don't have to suffer from it. So it could be kind of the petite
easily
mal
addressed
kind of seizure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So Dr. Becker, again, just sort of skipping around from stuff in the book, and we'll sort of keep interspersing some calls and emails. But over the years, we've done entire shows devoted to the topic of declawing, and I know it comes up a few times in your book. So I just think it's a message that completely bears repeating whenever you can. Maybe just talk about declawing and sort of the cons and the cons. Yeah. I don't know about there's pros and cons in this book.
I have to go back to, well, I've been a practicing veterinarian for 30 years, and we used to declaw routinely. I did ear crops, which to this day, every time I think back of the dogs that I cropped their ears on, I just think, why did I do that? I feel so bad for them for something that was just cosmetic. And now I practice in northern Idaho, and you have to go clear to Seattle to find a veterinarian that will do ear crops. That's how much has changed. There's not a single veterinarian in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, this big resort town, not a single one in the metro that'll do tail docking anymore. They'll send them to somebody else. So it's a big shift in our profession, but except in extreme cases, we're against declawing. And there's so many other things you can do. Constructive clawing is good. It's better to get the cats to use a surface that you like. And what you want to find out there, and we talk about this in the book, some cats like a horizontal surface. Some cats like a vertical surface. And if you have multiple cats, you might have one that likes a horizontal surface, one likes a vertical surface. Some like cardboard, some like wood, some like carpet, some like rope. And so you want a variety of scratching surfaces. People tend to put them in the wrong spot, too. They'll put them in a place that's kind of back hidden away. And cats, it's like Kilroy Kitty was here. They want to show that they are marking territory.
Yeah.
They scratch vertically. You can see it at a distance. So put them by a window, by a feeding station, by the water station.
Prime time.
What they'll do, they'll look out and see another cat out there, and it's like, row, in there, just work that thing over.
Right.
And it's always good kitty. Oh, use a good kitty when you're using the right scratching area.
Sure.
And remember those pheromones, by the way. But there's something that I love to show clients this. Besides that pheromone, that feel away that I use a something called clipnosis. And whether we've had a litter of kittens, or we've seen it on TV, or we've seen big cats in the wild packing their little kittens, you know, their little cubs or kittens off to another nest. By the way, a litter of kittens, another name is a kindle. So the mother is transferring her kindle from one nest to the other. Those little kits are just paralyzed. They're just completely limp as mother packs them over there. Well, there's a spot on the back of their neck that is sensitive throughout their adult life. So just like mama, but they might be 10 years old. So there's a product called clipnosis. It looks like a hair clip, or kind of like a binder clip you'd have on a sheath of papers.
Yeah.
But it clips on the back of their neck, and it's like you put them in a trance.
Mm-hmm.
You can give them medication. You can clean their ears out. You can brush them out. You can trim their nails. And when you're done, you just simply take it off, and it's just like wake up.
Yeah, I was fascinated by that in the book. And so that's the thing I was just trying to remember now is so you just put that on for the moment or the period that you're trying to accomplish whatever task you're trying to do with that cat, and then you just remove it, and there's no
– No, it's just like – and there's no
– It's like a chip clip in a sense,
matter
right?
Matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll put it on myself. And to show them. I've actually even put it on my lip, but I'll then say, if you want to feel it, and I'll let them feel it beforehand, because otherwise, if there's no setup, it just seems like, what is that thing on there?
Yeah.
And actually, on a bigger cat, you can run, I've run as many as six down their dorsal midline, so from the back of their neck down to their tail. And if they're a little more higher temperature or a little bit bigger cat, so you can put multiple ones on there, but they're like $2 or $3. And so what do you do there? That's a way for you to put one on, trim one or two nails, take it off. Oh, use a good kitty and give them some kind of delicious treat. A few days later, put it back on, trim a couple more nails, and pretty soon, guess what? That cat will just sit there, and you don't even have to use it, and the associated treat with it.
Sure.
Yeah.
You've trained the cat well. So, all right, well, let's take another email question. This kind of goes back to our conversation earlier about the parasite control. This is sort of a follow-up to that. It says, how does your guest feel about flea tick medicine like Advantage that, I think, flows through a cat's bloodstream? Is this stuff really safe? Why not use the old-fashioned flea collar to deter fleas instead?
You know, I feel so lucky we live in northern Idaho because we don't have fleas and ticks. So it's, people often wonder, well, what do you do in a veterinary practice if you don't have fleas and ticks? Because that's mostly what veterinarians see is skin problems. I remember back being in an area, practice near the country where there was a lot of parasites, and it was literally like chemical warfare. I mean, that's all I could describe. I mean, there was bombs. There were dusts. There were powders. There were dips. There were collars. There was everything you could think of. And now it's so much safer and more simple. Advantage does make one that I like too for cats called Advantix Multi. And the reason I like it, again, it takes care of heartworms. So heartworms, fleas, internal parasites. And again, I'd mentioned Revolution is actually the one I use on my own cats.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because of the internal parasite issue. It's just a,
right.
It's a lot easier to put it on their neck than it is to give a pill down them.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
But, it's kind of a weird thing that product was originally developed for strawberries, for parasite control on strawberries. Advantage
really?
Was, yeah. Imidacloprid.
Wow.
So it really has almost, it has human food safety to it because it had to be that way for strawberries.
Sure.
So it's a very safe product.
Wow.
And it's, I have a hard time describing how it works. You know, you put it on the back of their neck, same thing with Revolution, and it spreads across the surface. It's kind of like throwing a rock into a pond and the ripples spread. So it spreads through the lipid layer, the fatty layer. And it provides invisible whole body protection that lasts a month. And since cats don't get bathed or don't go swimming, it doesn't wash off like dogs. It's a little bit harder than some of those that are big swimmers or
okay.
get bathed a lot.
Wow. Cool.
And speaking of this, by the way, I'll give you another tip. I was told, as a veterinarian 30 years ago, don't bathe a dog very often because it washes the essential oils off their coat. That is completely false now. We now know from veterinary dermatologists, we recommend you bathe your dog once a week. And the reason is they get environmental allergies, and cats do as well. So if you think of a Swiffer, you're cleaning a tile or wood floor, and every time we do this at home, we live in a big log house, I look at that thing, I can see dust, I can see hair, I can't see dust mites, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see pollen and spores, but they're there. But I think, oh, this is gross. I don't even want to touch the thing. You know, I grab the corners and I fold it up and throw it in the trash can and do some more. Well, your dog or cat is a Swiffer with four legs.
Yeah.
Everything that's on the floor is on that cat or dog.
Mm.
And it gets absorbed through the skin, and they're now finding out up to 80% of the chronic ear problems. The dog's got an ear problem again. Or the dog's got chronic anal gland problems. Or now it is, it's face rubbing, it's licking its paw, it's chewing, it's scratching. Guess what? Those are caused by environmental allergies.
Wow.
So by simply bathing the dog, ask for a shampoo that your veterinarian recommends. You're probably not going to get it at the vet. Just say, what do you have at the pet store? What do you have at the grocery store you recommend? And bathe them once a week. And my daughter lives in northern Idaho, has two pugs, and pugs are terrible for skin problems. During the height of the allergy season, which is right now, she bathes them twice a week. Every time they come in from outside doing their business, unscented baby wipe. And guess what? Zero skin problems. Zero. But
wow.
If it kicks in, then there's a drug called Atopica for those people who've had pets that have suffered for years. It's Atopica. It's an oral cyclosporin. And for those dogs that have suffered for years and years and years right now that are chewing their legs, licking their paws, scratching incessantly, got the ear problems that are unresolved, that will break the itch cycle at the cellular level and is one I love to recommend because it provides almost instant relief.
Cool. Well, we are sort of nearing the end of our time, Dr. Becker, but let's take at least one more call. This caller, again, has been holding quite some time. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Marty Becker.
Hi, is this me?
It sure is. It's your turn.
Okay. Great. I got two real quick questions. I'll talk fast.
Okay.
I got a cat that 3 years ago, I mean, she was a fatty, but she had been, she's 13 now. She'd been a fatty all her life, and when I took her in, they told me that she was diabetic. I put her on insulin, and she lost so much weight so fast it scared me, and they told me to expect it. Well, I ended up taking her off the insulin. She never gained any weight back. She's so frail now. She's literally fragile. Like, I won't even pick her up anymore. She's that fragile. She lost over half of her body weight. And that's one thing. that I don't know whether that's right, wrong, or indifferent. And the second thing is that when I put her on the insulin, her urine somehow changed, and she now, like, makes concrete. I mean, for me to clean the litter box, and I do what he says, clean it every day. I mean, clean it. I try and clean it every time she pees. I try and, you know, and get there as fast as I can. But her urine alone, and I have three cats, her urine alone will turn into almost like concrete blocks that I have to work with in the litter box. And the other two cats don't do that. And I've got, you know, four litter boxes for three cats, which I think is plenty, but it's only hers I have to worry about. And I don't know if there's, I've tried every kind of litter, literally. I mean, seriously, I just go down the grocery store aisle and try every single brand name. And there's nothing that works that it won't do this to. So I think there's something in her urine. But when I took her back in, they told me the only thing that they could say was that she still had diabetes.
Okay, Dr. Becker, do you want to respond to that? That well, actually took quite a bit longer than we had time for. So
yeah, I'll do it quickly. One thing is she probably still does have diabetes. That's why the weight stays off, even though they can eat voluminous amounts, but they just can't convert it back into the body. Often, too, you have multiple metabolic problems. So you can have a cat that's diabetic and also has hyperthyroidism. So cats that are losing weight, have hair loss and things, can be hyperthyroid. Again, I would go back and try the pheromones as far as getting cats to use the litter box. Use the Feel Away, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y, to get them to use the litter box. And, you know, as far as these, people don't want to take cats to the vet. It's really hard. If I wasn't a veterinarian, I wouldn't want to take the cat to the vet. It's really difficult. That's why we've talked a lot in here about making it a fear-free visit. And I'm actually doing that. A lot of veterinary hospitals now are doing that, where the biggest thing you can do is leave the carrier out as part of fun furniture all the time. Don't leave it in the garage and take it out the day before the morning of the visit. Same thing if you had to evacuate down here. You want that carrier to be the funnest, nicest, most comfortable place in the house.
Yeah.
You do that by leaving it open. You give treats in there. You give tasty food in there. Remember, go back, feed canned food, not dry food. So this cat here is definitely dehydrated. It needs more water consumption. And spritz those pheromones in there. And so pretty soon, you know what, it's time to go to the vet or time to evacuate. You simply close the door and take a towel from home that has all the smells of home covered up so they don't see much, and it's going to be a lot better ride.
Cool. Well, sort of we might squeeze in just another thing or two. And one of the things, not to thrust everybody into depression as we wrap this up, but, you know, one time or another, everybody who lives with animals grapples with, the end, when to say goodbye. And one of the things I thought was really important in your book on this topic is you say, I'd rather be a week too early in euthanizing a pet than 1 minute too late. Maybe you can just talk about that, because I just think so many people struggle with that. And, they're obviously so tied up in so many emotions, and there's other issues, and people do wait, I think, too long. And even if they don't, they just never quite know when the right time is, and it's a tough one.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Duncan. I think that's something that we don't talk about enough. And again, I talked to people on this tour that talk to me about pets that they just lost. We're still in grieving. And I always think when the good times, as long as the good times outweigh the bad times, and it's different for every cat. For one, it might be the fact that they could always get up on this perch and look out the window every time. Now they can't climb anymore. Or for one, the fact that it always used the litter box. It always had an appetite. Now it doesn't want to eat. Now it doesn't want to use the litter box. When the bad days outnumber the good days and there's no hope of a cure, they're in pain, it's time to say goodbye. And a lot of times people just need permission for that. But, you know, often it's that thing of just waiting too long where actually the pet suffers. And I think that's one of the blessings we have that we can't do. You know, I have an 88-year-old mother that's vibrant, an 87-year-old mother-in-law that's vibrant. And it's different for humans, you know, with that very end. And they both say, don't leave me here just, you know, slobbering in this nursing home where nobody recognizes me from what I was, you know.
Sure.
And I think for animals, that's the last gift we give them. If they have no chance of cure, if they're suffering, or if they're not the same – that part that made them happiest,
right?
Then you can look at helping them say goodbye.
Sure. Sure, sure. Well, I don't know if that's the best, cheeriest note to end on, but it is really, really important. And, I'm sorry we didn't get to more of our emailers and more of our phone callers, but, we did cover a lot of ground. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Marty Becker. His new cat, his new book is Your Cat, The Owner's Manual. And the whole subtitle is Hundreds of Secrets, Surprises, and Solutions for Raising a Happy, Healthy Cat. And, as advertised, there's a lot of things even a longtime cat guy like myself found really interesting and surprising there. So he's also on Facebook and Twitter. And again, he will be signing a book later today at the Petco in Tampa on West Shore. Let me quickly find that address again. It's 136 Southwest Shore from 1:30 to 3 p.m. Dr. Becker, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, and we'll keep watching you on TV and reading your books.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, thank you. Okay, so you have been listening to Talking Animals, and it's time to play Name That Animal Tune. There's a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win, and the prize is a copy of Dr. Becker's new book, Your Cat, The Owner's Manual, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this feline-appropriate animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Get a guess, or we might take them off air. Well, what the heck? Well, there's got a few already, I'm sure. Hi, Talking Animals, can you name that animal tune? Hi, Talking Animals, can you name that animal tune?
Hi, it sounds like David Bowie and Cat People.
That's exactly right. What is your first name?
Deborah.
Deborah? Okay,
hi,
cool.
Hi, I'm the one that asked you about vitamin C one time.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll come back and get your information and send you off a copy of Dr. Becker's new book. So just stay
so
tight.
Much.
Thank you. Awesome. Congratulations. All right, so we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. The first part of June marks the 9th anniversary of Talking Animals. And to celebrate each year, I always try to present a special guest, certainly special to me. So we'll be back next Wednesday, June 6th, when our guest will be Carrie Brownstein, who fronted the late, great trio Slater Kinney, now leads the fantastic new band Wild Flag, and teamed with Fred Armisen of Saturday Night Live. Brownstein is also the co-creator, co-writer, and star of the acclaimed sketch series Portlandia. So I hope you'll join me next week for that. Also hope you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page. Like us or friend us, depending on Talking Animals or my own personal page. Follow us on Twitter and more. You can get through all those things easily from TalkingAnimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby Lusalis, wearing all kinds of hats lately and was in studio just moments ago shooting some video and pictures of Dr. Becker, so we'll get those up on our YouTube channel as well. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Coming up next is some more music, which I'll tell you about in a sec. But if you want to keep listening to Public Affairs, Tom Hartman's show is starting up at noon on 88.5 HD3 online at WMNF.org/the source. And meanwhile, Scott Elliott's coming up with the All-Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. Today, Scott is presenting Jazz Appreciation Day, a belated celebration of April being Jazz Appreciation Month. And he's starting with Miles Davis, so keep it locked right here on 88.5. We're closing out today's show with an animal tune. This one from Paul Thorne, who played two shows last weekend. Behested WMNF on his new album, Paul covers all kinds of wonderful tunes, including this, one of my very favorite animal songs in recent years. It's Paul Thorne with a version of Ray Wiley Hubbard's Snake Farm. Taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa. Thanks so much for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals.
Well, a woman I love, her name Ramona. She kind of look like Tempest Storm. She can dance like a little Egypt. She works down at the snake farm. Snake farm, just sound nasty. Snake farm, pretty much it. Snake farm is a reptile house. Snake farm. Ramona's got a keen sense of humor. She got a tattoo down her arm. It's a python eating a little mouse. Wearing a sailor hat that says snake farm. Snake farm, just sound nasty. Snake farm, pretty much it. Snake farm is a reptile house. Snake farm. She said, well, it's got its charm, but nothing to do in the winter. And then some kid gets bit at the snake farm. Snake farm, just sounds nasty. Snake farm, pretty much it. Snake farm, it's a reptile house. Snake farm. Said she cried when they broke up. She still plays the records at the snake farm. Snake farm, just sound nasty. Snake farm, pretty much it. Snake farm, it's a reptile house. Snake farm. Sometimes Ramona calls me up and says, come on down here, it's getting warm. She runs everybody off, and then we, well, you know. Snake farm, just sound nasty. Snake farm,